Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeah, I just went to the toilet before we began this, and that was even recorded. So that's the kind of thing we do around here.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
There he is.
Who needs me?
Who needs me? What's up, gents?
What up?
How you doing, Woody?
I'm good. How are you?
It's good seeing you again.
Yeah, good to see you too.
Yeah. So what?
Are we on air or is this small talk? My dad, you never know with my dad.
No, we're on air. Everything is on air.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I just went to the toilet before we began this, and that was even recorded. So that's the kind of thing we do around here.
It's not true.
You don't hear people use the word toilet much anymore.
You know that that for British people, that is like their substitute for going to the bathroom. They don't say bathroom. They say toilet. So
really?
it feels very abrupt when you hear someone from England just go, yeah, I'm off to the toilet. And it's like, what? Like that? I don't know. It just seems like a bit like slightly more graphic than saying I'm going to the bathroom.
I would imagine that they would say it way more pretentious than that.
Yeah. I'm off to the toilet.
Yeah. It also sounds like one of those old-timey words that was much more popular in the 50s and 60s than it is today. And I could be totally wrong. So, Woody, are you living in New York now?
Yes, I'm in Connecticut. Yes.
Okay. And you're still doing the Apple Plus TV thing, right? Everything changes so fast. I want to get caught up on, make sure I'm not missing anything.
Yeah. So, like my day job, as it were, is working for CBS during the week and for Paramount Plus on their soccer coverage. But yeah, I'm still afforded the chance to keep doing MLS every weekend. So I have New England and Chicago this weekend, and yeah, I'm constantly on the road doing games.
Oh, you are flying, my friend. You must have you must have so much airport content prepared.
Oh, you know what? That actually is the thing. But you know what though? It feels like so lame to do airport content.
Yes, it does.
But do I have a lot of? I have thoughts. I have thoughts about how people travel.
How about those people that go to the gate right when they announce it, huh?
Oh God, no! The people, like the people in Group 7 that are standing by the gate for 30 minutes. Yeah, what are you doing? You're in Group 7.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Right.
Why are you standing? The plane is not going to leave you behind. Just sit down. Anyway, this is the material we missed out on the last year.
Have you ever been in Group 7, though? I'm going to speak up for the Group 7ers. I want to get near the thing. I want to be ready so that when my number is called, I'm the first one there. That's why you do it. You're not...
But Chris, they call a group at a time.
Yeah.
So when they call Group 5, then you can start to matriculate over to the area where you're going to board.
But
when you're in Group 7 and they're calling... You know, the medallion members, that's not you. You're like nowhere near
but
it.
There's so many,
away from
but there's so many people that are rule breakers that if I follow the rules, I'm screwed. So it's like I either have to break the rules or else I'm not going to be one of the first people.
So if you're a Group 7, you duck in with the Group 6 crowd. Maybe if you're feeling froggy, the Group 5 crowd.
I mean, let's be real. They stopped checking around Group 4. So let's...
But I wish there was some kind of system that like... That they were able to say we're boarding Group 2 and someone in Group 7 is.
You want the person being shamed walking back?
I do. I 100% do. And they'll do the thing where they'll look at the boarding pass and go, oh, 7, interesting.
Like, yeah.
It'll you completely play it off. But yeah, the Group 7ers just wait. Just wait. Why are you standing? You're wasting precious standing time.
Right. You should relax.
And don't even get me started on how inefficient people are. Putting their carry-on bags into overhead bins. It's appalling.
It's like they're not even listening when they say, step into the thing, let people go by, and then do it. It's like they don't hear that part of it.
Or, like, there's a big giant sign now that says, put the bag on your side.
Yes.
And every time I look up and I see people put it straight in, I'm like, are you not registering the information that the world is providing you? There's a big sign that says, put the bag on your side. If you've ever traveled on a plane before, you know to do it, like the number of things I think of it in my head as like I'm doing like a Formula One pit stop. But it's like, how quickly can I grab my bag, toss my backpack over my shoulder and get going? And like, if I'm like clocking in at anything longer than 12 seconds, I'm like, that was too long. You're holding up this plane.
Yes. And if I feel like I have a lot, I'm moving inside. Even if I'm uncomfortable, like I'll step aside, like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, and then I step out.
And also, okay, so
I started that first topic of like when people rush up as sarcastic, like you hear every comedian do this bit, and we just spent five good minutes on it, by the way. Five good minutes.
The people. So first off, I hate the aisle standards when you land.
Yes.
But
Greg Cody is that.
Right. But you know what, though, Greg? I'm now coming around to your side, because I used to think, you know what? I'm a believer in decorum.
Yes.
Everyone will get off in an orderly fashion. But there are people who don't believe in decorum. And so I don't stand up in the aisle. And all of a sudden, someone's trying to jump me from two rows behind me. And I'm going, wait a second. Like, we all bought tickets in an order. You get off the plane in an order. You don't just get to jump. As a matter of fact, there was a couple that tried to cut me. Mm-hmm. And I saw that they were doing it. They were inching forward. And I intentionally stood up and separated the couple.
Boxed out.
I wedged myself in between the husband and the wife. So and I took my sweet time. Normally I'll go as quickly as I can. I reached up. I grabbed my carry-on bag. Mm-hmm. I placed it on the floor. I grabbed my backpack next to me.
Make sure you have everything.
There was a solid 30 seconds in between the husband and the wife.
Yes.
And we were both walking through the jet bridge. And we all know what happened. There was nothing said, but we all know exactly what happened. And I hope that couple never, never again thinks to step forward and cut their place in getting off the
plane.
They've
done that three times since that flight. I hope you know that.
Yeah, for sure.
By the way, I have to say, Winnie is revved. We got a revved up Winnie right now. I want to see all of the empty Red Bull cans in your room right now.
He can't do life topics on all these soccer shows he's on now.
Right, exactly. This is pent up frustration. This is a year and a half of pent up rants about plane travel. Yeah, and the funny thing was, if you found me about 2 hours ago, I was a husk of a man after getting into my hotel room at 2 o'clock in the morning, Central Time, which is 3 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time after calling a game last night. And I was a dead man this morning. And it somehow, all Chris had to say was, people who launch themselves towards the gate, and I'm off and running.
Can I call out Witty real fast, though? Because when we've had a text exchange this morning about him joining today, he was very willing, but he did this thing where he asked me which time zone, like the Greg Cody show, has ever recorded in a time zone other than the East. Like, I get Woody's, you're all around, Woody. I get it. You could be on the West Coast, but it's like, what time zone did you think the Greg Cody show was recording in?
I thought maybe you knew that I was in Dallas and you would be sympathetic to the fact that I'm in Central Time.
I did.
And that you said 12. I just have to be certain. We've done this before with scheduling interviews before, where you don't nail down the time zone and all of a sudden I'm an hour late. So I just wanted to be 100% sure.
I feel like in those debates, though, it should always be assumed that whatever the show is that the person is joining, if they say that's the time, it's in that end. But you're right, though. Like,
I thought you were about to be biased towards Eastern Time and that the world revolves around Eastern Time.
Oh no.
Which
no. Yeah.
I mean,
that kind of
there is definitely a bias. There's definitely a bias.
In America, it revolves around East Coast. Like, worldwide, I get it. You got to say East Coast.
Yeah. Greenwich Mean Time around the world.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the things I've missed about Witty happened when we were referring to people in group 7, inching forward, and he made a reference to people matriculating toward the gate, which I just enjoyed the use of that word.
I mean, even I know that word. That one's not that bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I like, and the funny thing is that if I would, like, if you were to ask me, say a word right now that'll annoy you, I can't. But it's only in the context in which we're talking about things that I can just summon something that Chris Cody will.
It happens naturally, is what you're saying.
Yes,
exactly.
You yelled at me. Oh, yeah, and you made fun of me the next day. It was. We went and had lunch at Flanagan's once, and the next day, like you said, Witty used this phrase, it puts a cap on, like it was some way, or like I doth protest or something, like it was something stupid that I said, and you had to go at me the next day.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done that so many times that I can't even remember.
I want to mine you for opinions on Messi, because I have a theory that
get it out, Dad.
I have a theory that Inter Miami will not win an MLS Cup with Messi. And the reason is that he's just being spread too thin with all these concurrent competitions. He's going to be injured a lot. He's going to have to rest a lot. In effect, I think Inter Miami itself in league play is getting sort of a semi-Messi experience.
Can I jump in? Before before Woody goes? And right. Any good soccer club is going to be playing in other, like, I don't think you're this is nothing that Inter Miami is doing to Messi. This just comes with when you're a better club and he's older now. Like, I just feel like right. This is all inevitable with anywhere he'd be.
Okay, but there's more, you know, Leagues Cup and now the CONCACAF Champions Cup and the Paris Olympics are coming up and they want him to be one of their two overage players, obviously. And there's just a lot that's detracting him.
Copa America as well this summer.
In Copa America, there's just a lot that's distracting him physically and mentally from Inter Miami and MLS competition. And I'm wondering what you think about that, Woody.
So I actually think that Miami are managing that right now pretty well. So he picked up a little bit of an injury. You push him through to play in that second leg of the Champions Cup against Nashville. And then he misses the game at the weekend and he's missing the international window with Argentina. And really all eyes are, for me in this early part of the season, that CONCACAF Champions Cup, because if you win it, then you're playing in the Club World Cup next summer. That's a huge stage for Inter Miami to play against teams like Juventus and Chelsea and Real Madrid and Manchester City. Like, it would be an enormous step forward for the league to have, you know, a team that can kind of, in some ways, carry their own burden of that spotlight. But I think it's a fair concern. I mean, this is still a player that's 36 years old. All of his support cast, the players they brought in, are in their mid-30s. And yeah, they're used to playing that many games in Europe. They've all been playing Champions League their entire lives and League Cups and Copa del Rey and all that stuff. But it's still a maximum of maybe 55 games. To me, the interesting thing is not necessarily whether or not it will result in Miami winning, because I do think that they will prioritize the big things, which for me are CONCACAF Champions Cup in the early season and the run-in for the playoffs to get him in full fitness and winning MLS Cup. And maybe the Leagues Cup, I'm not certain they'll push as much this year as they did last year just because it was the first thing, it was the first impression. So I think they will manage it throughout the season. For me, the interesting thing is, for example, he missed the game in DC. It's a full crowd, and people were like still kind of there. And it's interesting, he missed a game as well against Montreal at home. And it's kind of like when LeBron James misses a game for load management, or when these big NBA superstars and the people that showed up are there to see him. And instead, Miami just have to manage it. It's impossible for a player like that to play in every game. I mean, Argentina are about to play two friendlies, one in Philadelphia. I forget where the second one is. He's not going to be playing in those games. And it's interesting when you build the attraction around Messi and he's not there, how much that affects things. But it's literally impossible. If you played everything out, 34 MLS games, if you make a run in the playoffs, that's 6 playoff games. If you make a run in Leagues Cup, that's 7 Leagues Cup games. If you make a run in CONCACAF Champions Cup, that's 8 CONCACAF Champions Cup games. So what, we're at 55 just at club level? Then if you make a run in Copa America, that's 6 more. If he goes to the Olympics, that could be 6 more than that. You're talking about between 60 and 70 games as the maximum number of games. It's impossible. So it just comes down to Argentina and Inter Miami managing it well. But that management could come at a cost to, like, a psychic cost.
Yeah. And that's that many games with a team.
Dad, it's emotional. I know. It's emotional. We're still here, Woody.
I always say edit that out, and they never do. Yeah, they always leave me coughing in the podcast.
I laid out so that there would be a clean edit.
Oh, for the love of God.
A credit.
Staying in.
Okay, so not only are they playing 60-plus games, but they're doing it with a team whose nucleus is a quartet of guys who are all like 36 years old.
But, Dad, to Woody's point before, I think you're being very myopic, huh? Look at that. Because, Dad, this is such a normal thing for these guys, playing multiple tournaments within a season. Yes, he's older. Yes, they're going to have to manage it. But this is just an American journalist right here that is not used to, what is, like, 3 other tournaments in a season? This is overwhelming. It's not that overwhelming for these type. Like, these guys are used to playing multiple tournaments, having to sit out games midweek. Like, this is a normal thing in soccer. Yeah. He's not going to play every game. He wouldn't anywhere.
And I would say as well, when I think the result against DC United was really important, because I think it showed that Miami can still win games even when Messi doesn't play at all, when Suarez doesn't start, when Jordi Alba doesn't start. I think it's important that they have some kind of nucleus that can grind out results. I thought they played really well in that game against DC. It was a deserved victory. And so getting points on the board early, they've got 10 points in their first five games. You really only have to hit between 55 and 60 to be a top four seed in the Eastern Conference. And so the fact that you're getting them on the board when, like you said, you're playing through Copa America, I think that's five games at minimum that he'll miss in MLS. So that, like, you're just talking about a situation where they just have to get points on the board. I don't think the regular season is that important. It just has to be enough to get you into the playoffs. And like I said, maybe those last seven or eight regular season games get him a run of consistency and form so that he's at peak form entering the playoffs. But I mean, you're right, Greg, they will have to manage him. But I think in doing so, he'll miss games. The question will be is how they cope without him. At the very least, early returns have been okay.
It seems like the two biggest prizes for Inter Miami are the Champions Cup with its $5 million cash prize, plus the ability to go into the 25 competition, and the League Cup, the League Cup, the MLS Cup.
Right.
Which do you think is the bigger of those two prizes? Which should they prioritize? And do you think it's realistic they're going to win both?
I think the CONCACAF Champions Cup is a really hard one because you're still playing, for as much as MLS teams enjoyed success last summer against the best Mexican teams spend more money than MLS teams do. If you look at the designated player rule, which is you spend money over the salary cap, MLS teams have three of those spots to spend salary above $2 million, let's say, to bring in a player. And your average team in Monterrey, Tigres and CF Monterrey, have about 11 or 12 of those guys that are on that kind of money. So just top to bottom roster-wise, they're still excellent. Miami plays Monterrey in that next round. Because they have shown these periods in games where they're vulnerable and they give up chances, and Nashville didn't take advantage of it in the last round, and other teams haven't taken advantage of it. A team like Monterrey will. And so you have to, first off, accrue a decent advantage in the first leg, which is at home, and then you go to Mexico, and I think that could be really hard. But look, we've seen this Miami team down and out in lots of situations before, and they always manage to pull it out. They always manage to get over the line when Messi is involved. So I think when you look at that tie, it's going to be really difficult, and then you got to do it two more times against even more difficult opposition. I think MLS Cup is probably the more reasonable one for them to win. It all depends on health. I mean, Luis Suarez is another one where, you know, he's looking great now, he's scoring goals now, but there is that fear that his body and his knee is going to enjoy those difficulties. So for me, I think MLS Cup is probably the more reasonable one. I think they just have, beyond being the best MLS team, but, you know, by a decent margin, they have this mental advantage on the rest of the league, because if you're not two goals ahead with 80 minutes gone, you're thinking they can come back, they can win. And they just have that inevitability that the best Yankees teams have, that the best, you know, whatever, like the you know, Patrick Mahomes has in the NFL, that it's that mental advantage of, oh God, we haven't put Messi away. And I think as that factor is there, MLS teams in particular, I feel like, are going to crumble in the face of it.
Not only that, but I think Messi still has that aura about him, that aura of intimidation. I think if you're an opponent, particularly a young opponent, you feel like asking for his autograph or his jersey or posing for a photo as you're getting ready to face him in a match. You know, so that's
and sometimes those are the best players, right? Like, the funny thing is, the MVP of the league, I believe, is it Lucio Acosta? It might be somebody else in the league who has a tattoo of Messi on his body. This is the MVP idolizes the opponent that he's going against. And so, like, it's a completely different thing.
Yeah, I want to pivot from.
Wait, hold on. I want to know what decade Witty is living in, where he just said the Yankees have this aura about them. The Yankees haven't won since 2009.
I said the best Yankee teams. Okay, the best Yankee teams. Okay, in the late 90s and the early aughts, when, you know, you were 3-2 behind against the Yankees, you felt like they were going to come back. God forbid they had a lead. You knew Mariano Rivera was putting it away.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, is there a baseball team? There isn't a baseball team that's replaced that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. We're 20 years from that, though. It's crazy. I feel so old. Right. But
there is a generation of sports fan that doesn't even know what that's like.
Right. They're like Yankees. Yeah. But how many games are you calling a week these days?
One, maybe two.
Oh, okay. I thought you were.
It's reasonable. Yeah. Like, but there's some weekends where I'll do an MLS game on a Saturday and an Italian game on a Sunday. So, like, they'll come in quick succession. I'm usually filling the time, like, Monday to Friday, doing, like, studio shows, like our 1 hour, like, kind of sports center kind of show on the Golazo Network. So it's not like I'm doing nothing during the week, but yeah, like it's usually one to two a week.
And are you feeling, are you like getting in a groove with, like, are you feeling any different now than let's say a year or two ago in terms of just like the reps you've gotten and the comfort level and the confidence? Like, are you at the peak yet? Like, can, like, obviously you can still keep getting better, but are you just
sure?
How are you feeling there?
You know what's interesting? So I'm in Dallas right now. I called the U.S. men's national team last night. And their close call against Jamaica. And it's interesting that, like, even though, like, I've called a bunch of games, it is interesting that when you do a different thing, it has its own different characteristics. So, like, I mean, if anything, for me, there was, like, it was weird. I had a bit of nerves calling the U.S. for the first time. I hadn't experienced that in a long time. I was like, well, this is the U.S. I probably watched every U.S. men's national team game since, like, 2011. Like, this is, like, the thing. And for soccer broadcasts in this country, I think doing the U.S. is probably like the end goal. And so, like, it was a really cool feeling to do that, but it was different. And it took me a second to adjust. A couple of weeks ago, I did the U.S. women's national team. They were playing in the Women's Gold Cup that we had on Paramount Plus, and I had never called the U.S. women before. And it's interesting because, yeah, I have these experiences calling games in MLS and calling games in Serie A, but it's still a different thing. It's a there are nuanced differences that make it slightly different. So, like, I think each experience is different going between the calling games from a booth offsite to calling games from in the stadium is its own different experience. So you're still acquiring different experiences. But yeah, like now, for example, doing the Italian league, I do, you know, one or two games every weekend. I do the big teams basically every weekend. At this point, with Milan and Juve and Inter and Roma and Lazio, like, I'm really comfortable. I know exactly how I feel doing a game. And yeah, I'm developing that flow.
I want to ask you about the two U.S. national teams in the macro, because most of your lifetime and most of Christopher's lifetime, American soccer has been dominated by by the women's national team. Now there's a lot of evolution in the women's side. A lot of the older players are gone, new coach coming in. The men's team is in a position, yes or no, to be the bigger of the two teams for the first time in decades.
I think the men's team is really coming along in terms of where players are in Europe. I still don't think there's any American player that, like, is the focal point of a big European club team. A player like Christian Pulisic is playing really well for Milan, which is at a really high level. But their talisman, the player that they actually feature, plays on the left side. His name is Rafael Leao. He's Portuguese, and he is the center of the team. So I think the level of the American player is continually getting better. The level of young players coming through MLS is getting better. They continually recruit dual nationals. So it's interesting to me because I always feel like American men's soccer is waiting for this boom moment when all of a sudden we wake up and they're a top-level national team. I think because the U.S. are so behind and it's not inherent to our culture. It is inherent to the culture of major European and South American nations. It is their number one sport. Every player grows up with a ball at their feet from 3 years old. Until that cultural shift happens in this country, you're only going to get better piece by piece. And so, yes, I do think comparing the pedigree of player now to the pedigree of player from the past, there is a development. But I still think that you're not going to beat France, England, Germany, Spain, Italy, Brazil, Argentina, even Uruguay on their best day. You're still off that level.
For perspective, in odds, the USA is tied for 10th right now with Belgium and Uruguay behind nine teams. And they're
2026?
Yeah, 2026. And
and I feel like a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're at home. If you held it in a more neutral venue, they'd probably be 15th, 16th. That's about where the U.S. are. But that can progress over time. I think there are players that have taken steps down and then steps back up again. You look at a player like Weston McKennie, who was very much in a down spiral just last year, and all of a sudden he's become one of the best midfielders in the Italian league, which is one of the best leagues in the world. So I think that you can see a progression of players getting better. But still, there is something about when they come together as a group where it just doesn't always hit its ceiling, particularly from an attacking point of view. And we saw that against Jamaica, where they really struggled for 95 minutes to create clear goal-scoring chances. And that is always the biggest thing, right? Is how, when you're going against packed-in defenses, when you're going against teams that are going to make life difficult for you, can you pass through them and can you create chances? And that is really the last hurdle for them to clear.
Dad, send us the commercial break.
To commercial break? I don't know how to do that. You do it.
Just do it.
Okay, let's go to commercial break.
All right, good.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guys, let me talk to you about Sheets and Giggles. It's March. You know what that means. It's March Mattress. That's right. You're watching the games. You're watching March Madness. So why not have some March Mattress? Go to sheetsgiggles.com/Greg. Check out all the things they got going on. They have huge mattress sales, and it changes based off who's in the tournament. The best way to find out, the best way to get all the information, sheetsgiggles.com/Greg. It's where you go. It's where you should be going if you love good sleep, if you love comfort, if you love staying cool while feeling warm. It's a weird combination, but they are able to pull it off. They have mattresses, they have sheets, they have pillows, they have every single thing you need for your sleep game, and you need to step it up this March. March Mattress, sheetsgiggles.com/Greg. Guys, we love them. They love us. Support them. Check out their website. At one point, they had a ridiculous picture of Yeti on a bed, but I don't think that's there anymore. But I just think of it often because it was such a funny picture. Go do that. Sheetsgiggles.com/Greg. Let's get back to the show. Witty, I hate you. All right. And we're back with Chris Whittingham. Witty, what's the worst mistake you've made on like a broadcast recently? Like, have you had anything where you like call someone the wrong name? You curse?
No cursing. I did the thing which like you'll see sometimes like a bit on social media where I'll use the first letter of someone's last name and replace the first letter of their first name with it.
Yeah.
So there's a US player named Yunus Musa. I called him Munis Yusa by mistake. So I've done that one before.
And and how does that sit with you? Like, how do you react to that?
Terrible. It's terrible. I hold my cough button. I really just let out like this sorts of frustration. And I have like a whole process. It's like frustration. Then I close my eyes, deep breath, and we're back in it. Hopefully nothing has happened in that 8 second period. Well, I regain my composure. But yeah, just like the things that really piss me off are when like I misidentify players. It happens infrequently, but when it does, it really annoys me. But I wouldn't say anything too heinous in terms of obvious on-air mistakes.
Dad, I feel like this has been a sportsy episode so far, Dad. I have more. I want to talk Dolphins. We're going to get to Panthers. I mean, he thought he's not getting away. He didn't think he was going to
be. He's not going to get away with that. Yeah. No.
Wow. You want to talk about a team that's off a 3-0 defeat last night to Nashville?
Here we go.
Old coach, Andrew Burnett, 16 unbeaten with the Nashville Predators. Don't you miss him?
Don't you? I hate you. All right, you know what? We're doing this now. By the way, if you've listened recently, I said that the Panthers needed a little skid here because they were going so hot like 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, that I was like, we need to peak at the end of the season. So I need like a good 4 or 5 game losing streak in here. I said that on the air. I'm on the record here. So everything that's happening the last week is chef's kiss, right what we needed.
Let's make it clear. There's no need to win the President's Trophy. You don't. Right. You almost don't want that. They're fine.
We need to not have that conversation.
They're fine
right now
to finish second.
I really want to pin Witty down here because I don't even know how much of this people know. I know in the group chats it's way more of a big topic. Like, I don't know how much society actually knows about this. So let me paint the picture. Witty, a big Panthers fan, the last few seasons before they traded Huberdeau, we make the move before last season, Huberdeau for Tkachuk. And at the time, a lot of people agreed with Witty. Huberdeau is one of the best Panthers ever. Tkachuk, if you're not a diehard hockey fan, was an unknown to a lot of us, me included. I had heard of him, but didn't know anything about his game. And so we get him, and it couldn't have worked out any better. Tkachuk was amazing last year. We go on, but Witty, on the show at the time, which is an important detail here, right? Where you were on the show for...
Yeah.
Yeah, so this started
I had left just before the playoff run, and things are going swimmingly for me then because the Panthers were on the brink of missing the playoffs, which, my God, could they have just missed the playoffs last year?
That's
for
so
the
true.
Love of God.
That's so true. It's a totally different narrative if they miss the playoffs. So long story short, Witty has this take the whole season of, I don't like Tkachuk, even though he's balling out, having like a great season. I hate Tkachuk. They got rid of Huberdeau. They hurt me. Kind of like what Mike Ryan did with the Marlins. Like, this team has broken my heart, so I'm done with the Panthers. It's not a bad take for when you're on. But then he leaves our show, has no reason to keep this ridiculous take, but he apparently believes it. So throughout this season now, where the Panthers are dominating in this Panthers group chat, which Witty isn't even in anymore, it's just this... Everyone hates Witty because he's hating the Panthers at literally the peak of their existence. This trade couldn't have been better. Huberdeau couldn't have been worse since he's been in Calgary. So there's no reason for Witty not to say, you know what, guys? I got this one wrong. I love the Panthers. Let's root for this. Let's have fun. I know I'm rambling.
Admit it.
So just like I set it up for the audience that way, Witty. Like, explain how you cannot just admit you were wrong about this trade and love the Panthers with us.
Okay, so it wasn't just the trade, right? Which obviously pissed me off to no end. It was the fact that for two seasons, I thought, like, the Panthers finally made me understand what good hockey is. Because I've been watching the Panthers for so long be 5 points out of the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. That I almost, like, by virtue of the fact that I only really watched the Panthers, I didn't even know what good hockey was meant to look like. And so for those two seasons, they played scintillating stuff. There was that 3 months when Hard Rock was legal that I'd probably live bet the Panthers to win every single night when they went 2-0 down and that team just managed to score amazing goals. And I genuinely connected with the team. And it wasn't just that they traded away the player who I thought emblemize that.
He was the center of it, for sure.
Yeah, he has this incredible skill on the puck that I don't think is appreciated. Then they come on for the first broadcast of the next year. It's like Panthers away at Carolina. I'm already like predisposed to be pissed off. And Paul Maurice and the broadcast team are coming on going, what the Panthers did last year would never work in the playoffs. We're going to play playoff style hockey from the first day of the season. And it was like, it was so insulting to me. I was like, really? Like, this thing that I enjoyed, that like finally made me like hockey, you're going to like spit in my face and tell me that we can't win that way? As if like you couldn't have just, you know, brought in a new defenseman instead of Keith Yandel on game number 15,000 of his career, or replace this piece, replace that piece, make the team a little bit better, and they can go again in the playoffs. No, we have to completely toss it in the bin so that we can try something else. They were horrendous for 82 games. They got lucky with a run of form from their third string goaltender in the final 2 weeks of the season, managed to get over the line, and somehow pulled off together a playoff run. Now, it turns out they're actually a good hockey team. And that
because they're a balanced team. That team you're talking about a couple years ago, that defense was terrible. It's not just because of Keith Yandel. That defense was bad. They didn't play playoff hockey. Like, that's not... Maurice was not saying something just to say stuff. That team, that year, their offense was great, but we couldn't stop anyone.
Okay. But, like, I don't care. Like, honestly, I would much rather have them just gone again, bring in a couple new players, shift this piece and shift that piece, but they tossed it all away. So I don't want to do it anymore.
They just...
Honestly...
They
tossed it all away. They tossed me away. I don't want to watch... And honestly, I went to a game in person. I went to a Rangers game. I'm a Rangers fan now.
Oh,
I saw Rangers,
bite me.
I saw the Rangers against the Panthers, and after 7 minutes of watching the Panthers play, I'm like, I'm completely justified in my opinion. This is horrific hockey to watch.
You are...
I hated it stylistically. It's like so boring. Like, honestly, I hate watching the Panthers.
Do you hate the Dolphins now too? Like, do you not like this offense we have?
No, the Dolphins are fun. The Dolphins are fun.
So are the Panthers. The
no, they're not. They're hideous to watch. Dude, hideous to watch.
You're so honestly ridiculous. I've been a season ticket holder for 3 years, and I'm having so much fun at every game. They're coming from behind.
Okay, have a nice time. Enjoy yourself.
Okay, okay.
It's not for me, right, Clive.
Time out.
It's not
okay,
for me.
Time out. Time out.
I cannot believe he's so entrenched in this. Just admit. Just be like, yo, I was wrong. It was a good trade. Let's have fun.
I am calling
a timeout here.
Okay.
Huberto sucks.
Christopher.
Do you actually think he's a bad player?
Now, like,
do you think he woke up one morning and said, I'm a bad player now?
So what's your reasoning?
He played in a perfect structure that was perfectly suited to his skill set, and he had 115 points.
My dad called a timeout.
Okay.
Okay. Witty.
Yeah.
You're a bright young man.
Yes.
You're a bright young man.
So
and
stubborn.
You are now armed with the clarity of retrospect. So I have to ask for a yes or no answer. The Tkachuk Huberto trade was an unequivocal win for the Florida Panthers.
It doesn't even matter to me if it was. I don't care. The answer is I don't care. I don't care. I'm not a Panthers fan anymore. Let's go Rangers.
God,
I'm a fan of original six hockey team now.
Okay.
This hurts me. Like, God, you can't even, like, God, you must be real. You look in the mirror at night. You don't feel good about this. You don't feel good about any of this.
I will say, I still have the Florida Panthers on notifications.
Oh.
And every night, I check my phone, hoping that they lose. Every night.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, every night. Every night. And I get it. So when I see, if goal comes in, then it'll say afterwards who scored it. And I hope every time that comes in, that it's not Matthew Tkachuk. That's my experience with Florida Panthers hockey now.
I want to give you a hug. I can see the darkness in your eyes right now. You don't believe anything you're saying.
You miss us so much right now. It might be sad, but there is not a sinew of me.
You are miserable with hockey. You're
100%.
It's the darkest thing in your life. You and your crazy blackjack habit. Those are the two darkest things.
Oh man, it's available on app in Connecticut. It is grim.
You're like Otani. Do you have an interpreter?
Yeah,
do you have an interpreter?
It's two in the morning. It's 2 a.m. at a late night in the office, and I'm playing blackjack.
There's going to be some interpreter come out that Witty paid some gambling debt for Witty.
Don't you need some darkness in your life? You need some darkness in your life.
See,
sometimes.
There you go.
I feel like I have a very bright and positive disposition. I enjoy most things about life. And yeah, this is a very grim part of my personality.
Thank you.
But I hope every day that the Florida Panthers play a game that they lose 6-0. Nothing would make me happier.
This is I'm here for you. Anytime you want to talk about hockey, I won't tell anyone. I won't put it in the group chat. We can have a quiet talk about the Panthers because I know you still love us and you're just sticking on to this. Like, this is I'm sad right now. You've made me sad.
Okay. Speaking of sadness, I want to get away from sports for a minute and talk about happiness. Okay. Because
I need it.
The World Happiness Report just came out. I don't know if you guys follow this, but
I don't.
It's a UN sponsored index that been around since 2012. Finland is the happiest country on earth for the 7th straight year. As a matter of fact, Scandinavian countries kick the ass of the rest of the world. I got to move to Scandinavia just to see what all the happiness is about. But the US.
It's about free healthcare.
Yeah, that's probably a part of it. The US dropped out of the top 20. And is now 23rd in happiness for the first time. First time out of the top 20 in the history of this annual survey, which is a serious survey. The report on it is like 165 pages. They take this thing so serious. And I want to talk about what constitutes happiness for a minute, because in my own realm, professionally and personally, I'm as happy as I've ever been, right? And Graceland, my grandchild, has been a big part of that the last 6 years.
You're welcome.
Okay. But I get why the U.S. is no longer in the top 20. I get it. Because, you know,
guys can't get through a podcast without choking up.
There's so much going on in this country that, like, for me, I'm
that
speaking
you
for
just
myself.
Said you're happier than you've ever been. You can't, like, start talking about how sad.
it is definitely a negative cycle that happens where, and I think social media is a large part to play in this. But there's this negative cycle where you say, oh, all these terrible things are going on in the country. And yet, like, I don't, yeah, and there are definitely things to be worried about, certainly from a policy point of view, from a government point of view. But when you go down to your local restaurant, when you go to the Panthers game, when you go just you live your daily life, do you feel like, oh man, things in this country are terrible?
Man,
like, you're just like, other than like paying more for things, which is obviously bad, but like, when you go to La Bamba on a Wednesday night and sit down and have a platter of fajitas, do you go, things are terrible in this country right now?
And three of us are three fortunate people. There are plenty of people out here that have way less than us, but I totally agree with Witty. Overall, there seems to be, Dad, you were about to go on a 2-minute spiel about how things are bad and there's a dark, like, yes, social media has that, and that's where we all get that trope of, like, it's dark right here, there's sadness, but, like, I really do think it's overstated a little bit. Yes, there are people who need help. Like, I don't want to be dismissive of people who are struggling, but I do think that some people are doing all right.
I made the point that on a very personal level, personally, professionally, my own life is as happy as it's ever been. But I think happiness is a complicated thing. And for me, when I think about, all right, how happy am I? I can't ignore the fact that, one of the six categories in this annual ranking is freedom. Well, women no longer have freedom in this country. They don't even have freedom over their own bodies. Peace of mind is disrupted by all these mass shootings. And I know that when you're out to dinner and laughing and cheering at a Panthers game, they don't matter right then. But I think in the overall scope, they do. I hate the fact that we're such a divided country politically. We can't even agree on what the truth is anymore. And these are debilitating factors for me that make me worry about the world we're leaving. Maybe it's my age that causes me to think more in those terms, but I think all of that goes into happiness. And so when they tell me that for the first time in the history of this thing, the U.S. is not in the top 20, I'm like, yeah, I get that.
Well, now I feel like a jerk. Thanks.
No, I mean, I think we could have like a genuine conversation about, like, so what would provide that feeling, right? Like, and more affordable housing, not our freedoms being taken away, like all of those things. But you're right. I mean, like Chris made the point, we're all, I think, a privileged group of people that some of those things don't affect us. And but I don't know, even like things that are Florida based, right? Because obviously, you know, we lived in Miami, and you know, I don't have a child in the school system, so I don't know what the school system is like anymore and all the changes that have happened. But, you know, people say like, oh, you go down to Florida and you expect everyone to have a gun and everyone to do crazy shit. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like when I was driving around that I was afraid that people were going to pull a gun on me or that like all the tropes about Florida, which now I'm like kind of more keenly aware of because I live in Connecticut now, and they're like, oh, you're from Florida. Isn't it crazy down there? Like,
yeah.
It didn't feel like it was crazy when I was there. But like, yeah, like those things are generally out in the ether and they're placed in our face more. And I think they're, and part of like, and we can really go deep here if you want to, but part of like the capitalist society that we live in is constantly like looking at other people going, what do they have? And people have more. And, you know, I think there is generational issues here where like, I think your generation, Greg, was able to own a home at a much lower cost point than my generation is. Mm-hmm. And there's like an amount of like, I don't know when I'm going to be a homeowner. It's going to be, and I make decent money. And like, I don't know when I'm going to be a homeowner because it's like nearly impossible like to afford to live in a place like Miami or in a place like where I live now. So like, yeah, there are definitely issues in this world. But I feel like that general feeling of like, oh, aren't we all miserable? I don't know. I just, I don't know how that manifests itself in daily life.
Yeah.
Well, I think anybody who considers the word happiness naturally begins with their own life. Am I happy personally?
Right.
You know, am I happy personally and professionally? But it's bigger than that for a lot of people. You know, I mean, it's not just, am I happy in my family life and do I like my job? It's the world is going insane. You know, it's like craziness all around.
But okay, but like,
it's
Ukraine,
or Gaza Strip.
I was going to say, but do you think that's actually true? Like, or is it any more acute than it? Like, we had the Gulf War, we had the Vietnam War. Yeah. There's, you know, there was the Falklands War between Argentina and Great Britain. There's, I mean, the fall of empires, and there's always been like global conflict between countries. There's always been trouble in the Middle East, in particular, certainly with Israel.
These
things are more acute. And again, like, you see these images and they're heartbreaking and they're devastating. But I mean, my feeling is I don't know how like much more acute it is than at any time previously in our history.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm old enough to have remembered the Vietnam War protests, which were a national thing.
Yeah, you are old.
But I've never seen the country the way it is now in terms of the divide that at times almost feels like a pending civil war. And now
I feel like that's a little overstated.
Okay.
I'm not saying we're not divided. The civil, like, why are we going to civil? Like, we're in civil war.
And now you hear all these foreboding reports about the possible dangers of AI, which has only just begun. So, right. These are things, I mean, what, you know, my granddaughter's generation, how tough are they going to have it? What's this country going to be like after I'm dead? I mean, I think about these things. And it doesn't, I'm not going to overemphasize, and I'm not going to say it weighs on me. I'm not losing any sleep over it, but it does enter into my thought process when I'm reading about the World Happiness Report. You know, that's all. I could be wrong. I'm not saying I speak for everybody. I just speak for myself.
All right.
Boy, I brought this podcast to a grinding halt.
I do want to get Witty's thoughts on the Dolphins before we get out of here, because Witty and I, big Dolphins fans. I've said on the show that I think if you look at the names we've lost and the names we've added, just in that, without taking any of the context, it's a bad offseason. But I think if you have the context for how in the hole the Dolphins were with the cap and how this was going to be a bloodbath of an offseason, I think they filled a lot of holes. Like, I think that you can look at a lot of positions like cornerback and middle linebacker and safety, and you could say, all right, these names I'm looking at aren't that much worse than the names they had last year. Obviously, defensive line, hopefully they can do something there. Maybe we need a good third receiver. I just, overall, I think knowing that it was going to be a bloodbath, I'm feeling okay still about where the Dolphins are in the offseason.
How are you going to feel when the Tua extension comes in? Because we know, like, a lot of what's happening is bracing for that.
Yes. I mean,
and it's going to be $50 million a season.
I don't know what everyone's making right now. If Tua's in that, if Tua becomes the next highest paid guy, I'm going to be like, I want to sign Tua. I've been a guy saying they should trade for Justin Fields. Like, I'm not, I think that we can do better at the position, but I get how the business works and I get that Tua is good. So I'm okay giving him a big contract because you got to give quarterbacks big contracts. In my ideal world, it's in that slotted somewhere after the top guys, and he's getting like more than Daniel Jones, more than Geno Smith, but not as much as Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes. So that's the perfect world for me, but I'm good with paying Tua.
Yeah, and like that's been my frustration. I was like we said earlier, I don't admit when I'm wrong. I was definitely wrong. I didn't think that Tua was a starting level quarterback after his first season and change. And so I was definitely wrong about that. And Mike McDaniel has turned this into an incredible situation for him. But still, I worry about him completely falling flat in every big game the Dolphins played last year. And I don't know. I feel like you are entering a zone where it's kind of like the peak of the zone, which is you have a good quarterback, but not a good quarterback that wins you a Super Bowl. But I still think that that's where you're at. And honestly, like, there is a part of me, like, again, we were talking about, like, earlier, like, how much I enjoy style of play. Like, the Dolphins the last 2 years, even though they had no playoff success, have been a total joy for me.
Oh,
I
great.
Love watching. Like, if you said to me, do you enjoy sitting on the couch on a Sunday afternoon, popping open a beer and watching the Dolphins? The answer is 1,000% yes. And so that for me is a win. So I'm not necessarily obsessed with, like, getting Super Bowl-level quarterback play, but I don't think you have Super Bowl-level quarterback play, and I think if the Dolphins sign Tua up to a big deal, which, by the way, like, I think part of the reason why they were able to have some success with Tua is because they built together a fantastic team. Your ability to do that dramatically decreases when you pay a quarterback $50 million a year, but I still think that it'll be fun. Mike McDaniel is very clearly equipped to make that decision. I think he'll retain some value, even if you decide one day, all right, this isn't working out. He definitely earned it with his play last year. So you're kind of in that rock and a hard place. But if you ask me as a fan who wants to see the Dolphins win a Super Bowl in my lifetime, I don't think Tua Tagovailoa is the quarterback to do it. So if you're interested in that, then I think they have a really difficult decision to make. If you just think you have a good quarterback, it can be a lot worse because it certainly can be a lot worse. You sign him up.
What stadium is that behind you, or arena?
This is the home of the Dallas Cowboys, AT&T Stadium.
I was wondering, because you said Dallas, you were in Dallas, but isn't that in Where's that?
It's in Arlington.
Right,
Arlington,
that's why I was like,
yeah.
Making
so
sure.
I didn't realize that both the Cowboys Stadium, the new Rangers Stadium, and the old Rangers Stadium are all in the same complex.
Huh.
They're all in the same area. And so, like, I'm right across, like, over that way is the old Rangers Stadium. Over that way, I'm pointing,
yeah.
Like, is Globe Life Park the new Rangers Stadium? And it was like a whole, like, Dallas Live area where, like, a bunch of people get together before the game. So, yeah, I'm like, we're literally right across the street from AT&T Stadium.
Jerry's World.
I'm looking at, I see Jerry Jones on the roof, yeah, waving at us.
It's such a dumb joke.
Oh, hey, Jerry. Yeah. How you doing? Little Jerry Jones humor there.
You feel good about that?
Yeah, I do.
Dad, there was one more weird topic you had that you told me your topics before the show that I want to get to before we get out of here.
Is it the pig kidney?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Kidney.
Okay, I want to mention this.
I feel like there was another one, though.
But this is important, and now I've teased it. Doctors performed the first transplant in history of a genetically modified kidney from a pig into a living human. It happened in Massachusetts General Hospital. The patient was a 62-year-old gentleman. And he now has a pig kidney in his body, and he's recovering well and is expected to be discharged soon.
And the pig?
And, what's that?
And the pig?
The pig?
Without a kidney.
No, it was not a kidney.
The pig is lower down on the food chain, and so, sorry, pig. Yeah,
sorry,
you don't get to keep your kidney.
And he's having ham tonight.
Yeah, we're not supposed to worry about the pig, I don't think, but I understand the guy is squealing with delight over this operation. Get it?
All right. What other topics did you have? Dad, I feel like there's one more.
He also has a sudden affinity for mud baths for some reason. I don't know why that would be, but.
Rattle through your topics that you were saying before the show, because there was one more I wanted to get to.
All right. What do I got here? Happiness report. I wanted to talk about the Levitard Show popcorn scandal, but,
that's,
you know, because everybody,
man.
I lost a 4-0 vote, which was ridiculous. Dan's popcorn was grossly overseasoned. Mine should have won, let alone. You should have at least gotten a vote, but everybody is so scared of Levitard because he rules with an iron fist. If you don't vote for Levitard, you know, all of a sudden your career is stalled a little bit. Maybe you take a pay cut. You don't know what's going to happen. And so everybody, including my own son, my own flesh and blood, voted against me. Why? Because it was not a blind taste test. Everybody knew that Levitard over here with his overseasoned popcorn was the one you had to vote. You literally had to vote for.
Dad, yours was underseasoned. Like, yours tasted good, but it just needed, like, Dad, I saw the way you seasoned your popcorn. You had it like little thing. Like, Dan was like doing it out of the container, and you were just like sprinkling a little seasoning.
Okay, I was seasoning in layers.
And you had like three buckets of popcorn. Like, you just had way too much popcorn, not enough seasoning. This is not interesting to Woody. Like, this was not the topic I wanted to do.
Okay,
whatever.
Jazz Chisholm?
No.
That wasn't it? Okay.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
That was something, wasn't it?
Dude, yeah. That was something.
Did you see that podcast, the Pivot podcast?
Yeah, I saw like the main clip while I was scrolling on TikTok, and I was like, geez, he's really going in here.
And then
Samson's response, but I don't know. It's one of those things where clearly baseball tries to contain personalities, and
right.
He doesn't want to be contained, but I don't know. I mean, he continues to produce, and so, like, but it's one of those things where I feel like when you're that isolated, I know it's not really a team sport. It's a team sport. It's an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. But when you're in a team sport and you're that isolated from your team, like, I just feel like that has negative impacts. And
yeah, for sure.
I'm surprised at like the degree to which he was flaunting. Like, yeah, I was completely by myself. And I don't know.
That's one of those things, because that was reported a few years ago where it's like, oh, there was the Mattingly meeting and you're like, they don't like Jazz. Like, all this stuff was kind of hinted at and reported. But it's one of the rare cases where then you hear what actually happened and it's like worse.
Yeah.
Almost than what was reported, because I always kind of assume the media is probably just running with something. It's probably just like one conversation, but you hear his quotes and it's like, no, it was bad.
Yeah. And I respect Jazz for his honesty, and I'm not going to say, nah, it couldn't have been that bad when the man himself is telling you it was. I did think he took some unfair shots at Miguel Rojas.
I mean, there's two sides to every story. Like, I'm sure he did stuff. And I said on the main show, like, we can all relate to a new employee coming in with, like, 12 batting gloves and 7, like, you know what I mean? Like, there is a little bit of, like, hey, earn this before you're acting like you're a star kind of thing.
Yeah, one
in
of
any
the
work setting.
Rules.
In
yeah,
any work setting,
terrible,
Dad,
unwritten rules of baseball.
I bet the first day Levitard walked into the Miami Herald locker room with his, like, you know, fancy typewriter, you were probably like, who the hell is this newbie over here?
Fancy typewriter.
I'm just saying.
I mean,
that...
yeah, like there is a way to integrate into a social setting. And if you say like bleep you to the social setting, then I think the social setting would be like, well, bleep you.
Yeah.
And right. yeah, like, I mean, like you said, but I think generally in sports, fans, or at least like kind of more modern fans, gravitate more to the brash personality than the, you know, have to uphold the standards of baseball. Right. Which, you know, Miguel Rojas and the like stand for.
By the way, Woody, before we wrap this, I wanted to mention the retirement of longtime Miami Hurricanes women's basketball coach Katie Meyer, because I saw that you retweeted that. And did you know her at all? And
yeah. Yeah. So when I was at the University of Miami at the student radio station, women's basketball was a big deal for us because the traditional radio deal they had with QAM, they didn't do the women's games. And so we were the de facto flagship radio station for the women's basketball team. They made us part of like their traveling group. So WVUM travels with them to every game, their away games. And you're like, you're one of the team. And I don't know, when I was younger, and I still kind of am, like, I'm not going to go out of my way to, as we were just talking about when entering a social setting, like, I'm going to be the one who sat at the back and I'll talk to the people that I know. I know the SID, I know a couple of the staffers, but I never really talked to the coaches. I never really talked to the players. Like, I wasn't someone to be buddy-buddy with people. It's just not who I am with a new group of people. So I did my thing. And even though, like, I travel with them probably 6 or 7 times, like, I had a cordial relationship with Katie, but, like, I never felt like it was ever really that intimate in a way.
Right.
When I left, I think we played, NCAA tournament game in Iowa, lost to Iowa, obviously pre-Caitlin Clark era. They lost in the first round, and it was my last game. I was my senior year, and Katie pulled me aside and went, "This is your senior year, yeah?" And I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "So this is your last time with us?" Yeah. And like, Gabe, like, talked to me for 10 minutes about like how, you know, you did a great job and this and that. And like, I did some shows and I had her on, and then she'd like every once in a while will like send me a Twitter DM, like, "Hey, heard you on this, saw you on this, doing a great job. Congrats on everything that you're doing." And
nice.
I don't know, like, for her to do that with the student radio broadcasters from 6 years ago, I think shows a level of personal touch that why she's so great at running a program. I think the people that do that, I mean, you hear stories like that about Pat Riley too, where he knows people's first names, he knows the names of their kids and the names of their wives and all that stuff. Like, personal touches really matter, especially when you're running a program like that. And so Katie was always incredibly kind to me personally. I also just thought, like, for a program that didn't really have any business being good at women's basketball, she consistently made them like good and fun to watch, and was a fantastic steward of that program.
Yeah, I agree. She
emotional.
She hadn't had a losing season since 2008 or 2009. I mean, she's relentlessly won at that program, including wonderfully reaching the Elite Eight, a program first last year, and that program got screwed by not. They should be playing in the NCAA tournament right now after the season they had. I believe 19-12 record coming off that year, and they beat the number 4 team in the country at the time, NC State. At any rate, Katie's a very nice person. I didn't cover her nearly enough. I barely wrote women's basketball at all, even last year. And I feel bad about that. But yet, I got a nice thank you text from Katie, very kind text from her after a farewell column I wrote on her retirement. So she's just a class act all the way.
Did you just use Katie retiring as a way to plug your column?
Not only plug my column, but I also want to plug some new merch in our store.
Yeah.
The Hank Horny merchandise.
It's Hank if you're horny. No, it's
okay, but it's the person is named Hank Horny.
Yeah.
Okay. The slogan is Hank if you're horny, but I'm referring to it as the Hank Horny line of merchandise.
So yeah.
I gotta get to dad jokes in 3 facts.
No, Dad, we're done. The podcast is over.
Wow.
Okay. Why are you ending this? You could just send me on my way and do the dad jokes.
There you go.
Yeti, why do I keep calling you Yeti? Because it's Witty, Yeti, and Yeti's usually here. Mm. If I hate this segment. That's why. It has nothing to do with you.
He hates dad jokes and 3 facts, Jack.
All right, but yeah, let Witty go. We love you, okay. Witty. Were we hard enough on him with the Panthers? Because I'm going to hear about this
I feel like you did. I mean, you basically said I lead a sad existence. So
yeah, I mean, I just feel like don't
that's
believe
sufficiently
you.
Harsh.
I really don't believe you. I think you're
you don't
sad. I think you're sad deep down. I think you look in the mirror and you say, I really love the Panthers, but I'm just too deep in this right now and I can't go back. You can come back.
Turn back.
I'm trying to tell you, you can come back. We're still here.
I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back until Matthew Tkachuk departs the Panthers.
Oh, okay, one last chance to say it was a good trade. One last chance.
Nope.
All right, get out of here. Tkachuk you. Get out of here.
Okay.
All right, see you, lads.
All right. Cheers, boys.
See you, Woody. Thank you.
Thanks, Woody. Chaps.
Dad, we're not doing this segment. Like, seriously, the show's over.
Really? You don't want to do dad jokes in three-pack shack?
We're going on an hour here. Like, it's just, we'll get to it next time.
Okay. All right. They were really good, particularly one of them.
All right, go ahead.
Just excellent.
So one of the six is good. Great. That's great. I'm really excited.
But we'll save it. We'll save it for next week. There's also something else, a couple of things, interesting things I wanted to get to that I couldn't because Chris Whittingham, you know, he knows how to talk, that guy. He gets revved up and he talks and talks and talks and we love him for it. That kind of thing. Thank you, Chris Whittingham, for joining us. Really appreciate you. Thank you, podcast family. I appreciate you all even more than I appreciate Chris Whittingham, even though I appreciate him a hell of a lot. That kind of thing. So forth and so on. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Oh my God, I wasn't recording any of that.
Liar. I'm looking at the word recording.
Wow, you've learned. Wow, a year ago that would have worked.
Yes, the first couple of times you tried that, I was honestly, like, my jaw dropped. Like, I didn't know what to do. I thought you were telling the truth. Oh my God, it still makes me nervous just thinking about that. Hey, that kind of thing, huh? That kind of thing. See y'all next week.